talk about a collision course. Prime Minister Netanyahu, President Obama, Congress, Israel, America. What's going to happen next?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Who could have scripted it like this? Who could have scripted that you'd have this kind of showdown between the president of America and the prime minister of Israel, and that he'd be speaking to the joint houses of Congress the day before the Purim holiday begins? Who could have scripted anything like that? God? Yeah. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Had a great day of ministry yesterday right outside of Nashville, Tennessee. Spoke yesterday morning, two services at the pastor's request, Church of 5,000. Pastor's request, I spoke on understanding radical Islam, and had a young man come up to me afterwards, all smiles, an Iranian young man, former Muslim, a former devout Muslim, came to faith in 2010, all smiles, and he said to me, everything you said was true and accurate. Then a woman came up, another believer, Catholic background, lived in Iraq until 2005, moved with her family, lived in other Muslim countries, absolutely affirming what we spoke. And then at night did a Q&A after a talk on the church and culture, how to get involved without getting involved the wrong way. Got up early this morning, flew back to be here live for radio. And to everyone listening in one of our great stations in Charlotte, North Carolina, if you are listening on our AM or FM signal right now on the Truth Radio Network, you can join me today, 4 o'clock. Well, the rally will start at 4, and I'll be getting there, God willing, about halfway through and then speaking at 4:50. This is a rally concerning a discrimination bill that the city council is discussing tonight. There will be as many as 75 speakers. I'll be one of them, each taking 2 minutes to address the city council members about this very volatile bill. But there'll be a rally first with Christian leaders of the city, 4 to 5 p.m. If you live anywhere near Charlotte, maybe you can get out of work a little early and head down. Maybe you can just swing down into the city if you're free. It will be at the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Government Center, 600 East 4th Street, 600 East 4th Street in Charlotte, between 4 and 5. This is not a gay-bashing rally. This is a Jesus-exalting rally. Before we get into what's happening with President, Prime Minister, America, Israel, Iran, will Iran get nuclear weapons? Is America making it easier for Iran to get nuclear weapons? Is it true or just false reports that President Obama told Prime Minister Netanyahu last year, don't try to take out the nuclear reactors with force, otherwise I'll shoot your planes down before they can do it? Before we get into any of that, let me read the word to you. Psalm 2, verse 1. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. Then he will speak to them in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, as for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will tell of the decree. The Lord said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Now, therefore, O kings, be wise, be warned, O rulers of the earth, serve the Lord with fear, rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you perish in the way, for his wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are all who take refuge in him. Why do I read that? I read that to remind us, whatever happens in this world, whatever America does, whatever Iran does, whatever Israel does, there is an ultimate king who rules and reigns, and he will bring his will to pass on the earth. Now, what do you think? You think America and Israel are about to have a break in relations? 866-34-TRUTH.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My friends, I've come here to draw a clear line. You know that I like to draw lines, especially red ones. But the line I want to draw today is the line between life and death, between right and wrong, between the blessings of a brilliant future and the curses of a dark past.
That was the voice of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaking earlier today to AIPAC. This is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. He's in the United States, scheduled to address Congress, joint houses tomorrow. Was it a breach of protocol for him to be invited by Mr. Boehner? Is it right for the United States to be questioning the timing of this in the midst of Israeli elections? Is it right for us to be negotiating with Iran when the and leaving Israel out and basically doing something that many say is going to make it very easy for Iran to get nuclear weapons? And many say that Iran, under the sanctions, was really having a hard time, and now we've made it easy. And if the arrangement that we're making is so good, why leave Israel out of it? And in the midst of all this, I can't say I'm surprised, but still, in the midst of all this, Secretary of State John Kerry said, quote, "We have a closer relationship with Israel right now in terms of security than at any time in history." Really? Really now? That is absolutely fascinating. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you as we talk about this showdown coming with Congress, with Prime Minister Netanyahu, many Democrats saying they won't be there, others saying they want to do whatever they can to be there to hear Prime Minister Netanyahu speak. And I want to just play a longer clip. Prime Minister Netanyahu speaking to AIPAC, and he's going to quote from Deuteronomy 30 in Hebrew. And you'll see that many of the people there understand the Hebrew because they respond before he translates it. But how much can we make a biblical case for this? How much can we point to Scripture on this? How much is this a matter of biblical prophecy, or this is just two nations right now with tension between the senior leaders of each nation, Obama and Netanyahu, and with lots of controversy about the best way to deal with Iran? Maybe we should just look at it in a secular way, or are we fooling ourselves if we do? And where does Purim come in with all this? I'll do my best to open this up and give my perspective. If you'd like to weigh in, I'll go to the phones in a little while, 866-34-TRUTH. 866-3487-884. Joey, let's go to clip number 10. I'm sorry, clip number 11. Prime Minister Netanyahu speaking earlier today.
My friends, on behalf of the people of Israel, I bring you a message from Jerusalem, the cradle of our common civilization, the crucible of our shared values. It's a message from the Bible. החיים והמוות נתתי לפניך, הברכה והכללה, ובחרת בחיים למען תחיה אתה וזרעך. I have put before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. Choose life so that you and your offspring may live. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends, never forget, America and Israel stand for life. We stand together on the right side of the moral divide. We stand together on the right side of history. So stand tall, stand strong, stand proud.
Obviously, if you say radical Islam is wrong, and radical Islam has destructive goals, and radical Islam will use terror to carry out its world domination goals, and even believing in some type of apocalyptic end time calamitous war that they'll be part of, and they're just moving towards that. Well, obviously, you want to side against that. So who do you side against? You side against Iran. You side against Islamic State. You side against Al-Qaeda. You side against all these groups. And who do you side with? You side with our historic ally, Israel. But hearing the prime minister quoting in Hebrew from the Torah, from the Hebrew Bible, it reminds me of how supernatural this whole thing is. Because if you went back two generations in the midst of the Holocaust and said there'll be a modern state of Israel that will even be a superpower in its region, that there will be a modern state of Israel where Jews can come from around the world in the midst of anti-Semitism and persecution. And although the Jews will be decimated by two-thirds in Europe, 6 million out of 9 million European Jews will be killed, there'll be 6 million Jews living in Israel a generation or two later. It would have seemed impossible, and they'll be speaking Hebrew again. It all would have seemed completely impossible. Yet that is what is unfolding. That is what has unfolded. I must see, from my perspective, the hand of God involved. Now, I don't know every detail. I can't say here's a specific prophetic reference. If you feel there's one, fine, go ahead and share it. But I can say this is part of a larger prophetic scheme. This is part of a larger prophetic scenario. This is part of a larger end time work that God is going, even if there are three or four that he's doing, even if there are three or four generations after us. And obviously, those were the closing statements of the prime minister to a rousing response from the people. Now, many others are quite hostile to that, feel very differently about that. Let me give you a sampling. Youssef Munayyer, Palestinian-American writer, political analyst, based in Washington, D.C., born in Lod in Israel. He tweeted out, if members of Congress even boycotted Mandela, who fought against apartheid, they can boycott Netanyahu, who supports it. So here he's going with this whole ugly statement that the prime minister of Israel supports apartheid. And let's listen. I'll play these from my end, Joey. Let's listen to what Youssef Munayyer has to say.
It's really, I think, inappropriate and in fact dangerous when we have foreign leaders coming to the United States to challenge a president who's trying to keep the United States out of war. The reality is the American people are tired of going into wars in the Middle East, which could be...
All right, tell you what, it looks like we have a glitch in our system, boys. And what I just played did not come through the system. My profound apologies. But this is one gentleman who who is on the exact opposite end of the spectrum here in terms of position. And our administration says, look, we are working strongly. We are working strongly with Israel. We are working strongly to support Israel. The U.S.-Israel relationship under President Obama, this is a White House brief that has been released, a document published by the White House on the eve of Netanyahu's flight to the United States. Five things you need to know about the U.S.-Israel relationship under President Obama. I mean, this is a real PR battle here. One, a strong defender. President Obama has strengthened Israel's defense in concrete and unprecedented ways. Two, an international ally. Under President Obama, the U.S. has led global efforts to defend Israel's legitimacy on the world stage. Three, a proponent of peace. The president has strongly supported Israel in its quest for peace with its neighbors. Four, an economic partner. Under President Obama, the U.S. has a strong and robust commercial relationship with Israel. Five, a support system for refugees and migrants. Under President Obama, the U.S. has invested millions in helping Israeli immigrants. Hey, I would love for our administration to be the best friend Israel's ever had. I would love for relationships between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu to be the best with any president. I would love when we look back that we would say Israel never had a better friend than Barack Obama and the current administration. And if America is so pro-Israel, then welcome Prime Minister Netanyahu over. Let him bring his challenge to Congress that we're making a mistake with our policy with Iran. And let him warn the American people, if that's indeed a friend and an ally, do it. But if you talk to the man on the street in Israel, you will understand there is tremendous suspicion in terms of where our president stands with regard to Israel. Tremendous, deep distrust. And I'm sad to say, I believe the distrust is merited. And many of the leaders would say so as well. So here's my question. We'll come back and take your calls. Here's my question for you. If there's a breach in the relationship between America and Israel, do you believe that would be negative for America? Do you believe that would bring some kind of judgment? Do you believe that would somehow negatively impact the nation? That if America lost its close relationship with Israel, that it would bring judgment on our nation? I'm just curious to know if you think that way. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, which I'm going to do momentarily, I just want to point out some things about Purim. If you're not familiar with Purim, read the book of Esther. This is the book that describes how Haman, who was raised up as a senior official under the king of Persia, wanted to wipe out the Jews because he hated Mordecai, who refused to bow down to him. God turned it around. He ended up being hung on his own gallows. And the festival of Purim is celebrated every year as a time of celebration in the Jewish community. And you have plays acting out where someone's dressed as Haman and everyone boos Haman. And it's a fun time. It's a time of celebration. But it's a time of unusual events in Jewish history. I just checked a reference on Wikipedia, Recent History Purim, and it actually had a number of good references there, noting that Adolf Hitler banned and forbade the observance of Purim. In a speech made on November 10th, 1938, so this is the day after Kristallnacht, really the beginning of the Holocaust, the official beginning when the Nazi henchmen set synagogues on fire, broke down places of Jewish business, Jews were beaten, some were killed. He made that speech, he forbade the observance. In a speech made November 10th, 1938, Julius Streicher, who was a propaganda leader for the Nazis, surmised that, quote, just as the Jews butchered 75,000 Persians in one night, the same fate would have befallen the German people had the Jews succeeded in inciting a war against Germany. Quote, the Jews would have instituted a new Purim festival in Germany. Nazi attacks against Jews often coincided with Jewish festivals. On Purim 1942, 10 Jews were hanged in, can't pronounce the name of the place, to avenge the hanging of Haman's 10 sons. In a similar incident in 1943, the Nazis shot 10 Jews from another ghetto. In Purim Eve that same year, over 100 Jewish doctors and their families were shot by the Nazis. Following day, Jewish doctors were taken from one city and shot nearby another. And then when Julius Streicher was being executed after the crime tribunals for World War II, it's alleged that he sarcastically remarked Purim Fest 1946 as he was about to be hung. And there is a tradition believed by Lubavitcher Hasidim, some of you may be listening now, in Brooklyn and Crown Heights or other parts of the city or other parts of the world, but there is a Hasidic tradition that while the then new leader of the Lubavitcher Hasidim, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who died in 1994 at the age of 92, while he was giving one of his talks called the Verbrengen, while he was giving one of these talks, that at that moment that Joseph Stalin was stricken and died, he was suddenly paralyzed March 1st, 1953. That corresponds to Purim 1953. He died 4 days later, and due to his death, nationwide pogroms against Jews throughout the Soviet Union were averted, as Stalin's infamous doctor's plot was halted. If this played out according to some kind of form, you know what it would mean? It would mean that Iran, this is Persia, just like the Book of Esther, that's why I said you couldn't script it like this, was really ready to attack Israel and was really ready to get a nuclear bomb, and somehow the whole thing got turned against them and ended up backfiring. Stranger things have happened at this time of the year. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Charlotte. I was going to start in Charlotte, but let's go to Fall River, Massachusetts area. John, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. Dr. Brown, I agree with you 100%. Our country has been turning its face and slapping Israel ever since President Obama has become president. He's had the Brotherhood in the White House, secret meetings. He's also had, you know, our national security, homeland security person there elevated to who is Muslim. We are turning a blind eye to this, and it's going to bite us in the tail, because whoever goes against Israel and its blessings, I mean, they're our brothers. I'm part Jewish. I found out recently that my grandmother's family during World War II escaped through Europe, through Portugal, and, you know, changed their religion because of the persecution.
That's often more common than we realize, John, that people under persecution suppress their identity, change the name, and then people discover Jewish blood and ancestry, which of course doesn't change our spiritual state or condition, but it is interesting to make the connection. And again, John, many are concerned that there have been secret meetings with leaders even involved with Muslim Brotherhood in the White House, that there is a persistent turning against Israel for whatever reason. At the same time, we continue to support, we continue to stand with them with Security Council. Measures come up that we're vetoing, but certainly we do have reason for grave concern. I agree. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Marilyn in Leonardtown, Maryland. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I listen to your program every day whenever I can on WAVA.
Yes, thank you so much.
Obviously, the people who are advising our president have not read the Bible. They don't seem to realize that the Bible says Israel is his chosen people, and those who bless Israel will be blessed by the Lord. And I don't remember the exact words, but those who don't...
those who treat them disdainfully or those who curse them will be cursed.
Right, will be cursed. And that's what it says. The Bible is true. And I have many Messianic Jewish friends, and all my Christian friends who have read the Bible and understand also feel the same way.
Got it. Well, listen, Marilyn, I appreciate your heart. I appreciate the fact that it seems very plain and clear to you, and so glad to be broadcasting this over the great WAVA airwaves all over D.C. and into Maryland and Virginia. Now, you may differ, and if you differ, we're going to keep talking about this. Another reminder, if you live in Charlotte, please join me, 4 o'clock, 600 East 4th Street, by the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Government Center, 600 East 4th Street, a rally today about the discrimination bill, 4 to 5 p.m. We got such a terrific response to last week's resource offer, a really terrific response, that we are holding it over one more week. This is the video, the DVD, 96 minutes on the Achilles heels of evolution, with one fatal flaw after another of evolution exposed. Scientists, PhDs explaining it clearly, great graphics, great illustrations, a great tool. But we're packaging it with two great interviews we did last week with two of the scholars on that DVD, Dr. Jonathan Sarfati and Dr. Robert Carter. So together, great resource package, and only $25 for all three of those resources, postage paid. Call today to order as many copies as you like, 1-800-278-9978. Get that? 1-800-278-9978. You can call now or go to the website if that's the easiest place to order. You'll also see a video where I'll tell you more. That's at AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Again, I have no verification, no refutation of this. Simply a headline, an article that's being widely reported that, according to a Kuwaiti paper, an unnamed Israeli minister with good ties with the U.S. administration revealed the attack plan to John Kerry. What attack plan? Namely, that President Obama threatened to shoot down Israeli Air Force Iran strike. So this is the Bethlehem-based news agency, Ma'an, has cited a Kuwaiti newspaper report Saturday that U.S. President Barack Obama thwarted an Israeli military attack against Iran's nuclear facilities in 2014 by threatening to shoot down Israeli jets before they could reach their targets in Iran. Following Obama's threat, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was reportedly forced to abort the planned Iran attack. Is this accurate? Don't know. Don't know. I'm reading the same stuff you are reading. According to this report, former U.S. diplomat Zbigniew Brzezinski, who enthusiastically campaigned for Obama in 2008, called on him to shoot down Israeli planes if they attack Iran. They have to fly over our airspace in Iraq. Are we just going to sit there and watch, said the former National Security Advisor to President Jimmy Carter in an interview with the Daily Beast. We have to be serious about denying that right. If they fly over, you go up and confront them. They have the choice of turning back or not. No one wishes for this, but it could be a liberty in reverse, referring to a past incident that took place. So, again, this is all very intense stuff to hear and to process. And the question I'm asking is, do you believe that if America treats Israel, talking about the modern state of Israel, if America treats Israel rightly, that God will bless America. If we treat Israel wrongly, that God will curse America. 866-34-TRUTH. I've got a bunch more items to talk about regarding the Prime Minister's speech, regarding the posture of Congress, regarding a controversial ad my friend Rabbi Shmuley ran that's gotten him in the hot seat. I'm sure he doesn't mind being there. We'll talk about all that, but first back to the phones. Let's go to Philip in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Enjoy your show. And I spoke to you on the phone for the first time a week or so ago where the topic was once saved, always saved, or can you lose your salvation? And I argued that you can't. So I enjoyed talking with you for the first time.
Well, thanks.
I do not believe that if the U.S. chooses not to support Israel, that they will be negatively judged by God.
Okay, because?
Now, I think that there's reasons outside of Scripture to join with Israel. I support Israel probably 90-some percent of the time, and I definitely feel that they're the most democratic and most moral country in the Middle East. But I think we have to be consistent and contextually honest when we look at Scripture and ask ourselves, is secular Israel, is the state of Israel, God's covenant people? And I don't think we can make a legitimate case that they are. I think
all right, so here's the question. When God said that he would scatter Israel to the nations in its sin, right?
Right.
That was the covenant people he was going to scatter, correct?
That's correct.
All right, so he scattered the covenant people in judgment. And then he said he would judge the nations as to how they treated those people. So that was the people, even under judgment. It wasn't just the believers or the holy remnant. And when he said, I'll regather you, he's talking about regathering the ones he scattered. Stay right there. We'll continue this on the other side of the break.
The Line. Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are discussing whether God will judge America scripturally if we mistreat Israel, not simply based on the fact that we shouldn't mistreat any nation, not simply based on the fact that Israel is our greatest democratic ally in the Middle East, but based on God telling Abram, then repeating it later to Isaac, and then through Balaam for the whole nation of Israel, that I'll bless those who bless you, and those who treat you disdainfully, I will curse. So Philip from Charlotte is questioning whether we can apply that. So let me just read a verse to you, Philip, and then we can try to sort this out. When Paul is writing in Romans 11 about non-believing Jews and how there'll be a turning of non-believing Jews to the Messiah at the end of the age, he says this about non-believing Israel. As regards the gospel, they, so non-believing Jews, Israel, they are enemies for your sake. But as regards election, they, these same non-believing Jews who are hostile to the gospel, they are beloved for the sake of their forefathers, for the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable. So the only way that we've existed as a Jewish people is because God promised to preserve us under discipline, promised to regather us not because of our righteousness, but because his name was being blasphemed, and has in fact regathered us back to the land. If he scattered us, we can't regather ourselves. So it would seem that even when Balaam reiterated that prophecy, it was over the nation as a whole that hadn't even come in from the wilderness into the promised land. So it seems that God is dealing with the nation as a whole, even under judgment, and still telling people, for example, in Jeremiah, that if they mistreat the Jews, the non-believing Jews scattered in the land, that God will judge them for it, because that's whoever touches them touches the apple of his eye. I would see it as if you had a kid who was in bad relationship with you, and you had to kick him out of the house because he was 20 years old and was doing drugs and wouldn't submit to the house rules. You love him, you care for him. If somebody mistreats him, you're going to deal with that person and hold them accountable, even though your kid's not in right relationship with you. So what's your take on that?
I agree 100% with the passage you just quoted out of Romans 11. Where we probably differ is when I get to what I see in Scripture is what God's Word tells us the purpose of human government is. And it's not to have a successful human government, and not even really to have a good human government, but to demonstrate man's utter failure through human government and inability to rightly govern apart from God. And
but
I think that Israel...
Go ahead.
And I was going to say that I think that Israel, by no stretch of the imagination, can we say that they're in covenant relationship with God. They're trying. I would say that this regathering right now that we had happen in 1948 is a counterfeit gathering of what God will ultimately do.
So human beings can. So hang on. If God opens the door, no one can shut it. That's throughout Scripture. If he closes the door, no one can open it. If he blesses, no one can curse. If he curses, no one can bless. He scattered Israel. How can they have a counterfeit regathering? How is it possible, if he scattered, that the Jewish people could regather themselves? That would be undoing the edict of God and overthrowing God.
Well, I mean, look at what's happening every now, is even now, as when at the Tower of Babel, God confused all the languages. Before that, there was one.
Right, and he confused them.
Thousands of years later, we're coming back to a convergence of where there's less than 10 different languages around the world, major languages. It's getting back to from the relative human perspective, but looking like it's undoing what God did, but God, but in the absolute sense, is allowing for that.
Okay, but God, right. Number one, we're still not at one language. I travel around the world, okay, and we constantly translation. And there are also thousands of dialects where that's the only thing that people speak. So there are major languages, okay? But there are thousands of dialects where you can't even talk to the people at all. So we are light years away from one universal language. But you're still not dealing with the fact that God said he would scatter, and therefore no one can regather. It's a simple thing. I encourage you to wrestle with that. I appreciate that you stand with Israel and agree with so much of this, but I encourage you to wrestle with it. When God said, I'll bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you, it wasn't based on how good Israel was. It wasn't. It was simply the fact that he made promises. We can't get away from that. But thanks for the call. I appreciate that you seek to think these things through. Let's go to Lexington Park, Maryland. Bruce, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Michael. I appreciate what you just said to Philip. And I think part of the problem still remains in much of evangelical America. We have misconceptions on the basis of the effects of replacement theology.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, the Word of God is true, the promise of God is true. We would have no Bible without Israel. We would have no Jesus without Israel. He will not forsake that promise to them. And if we curse them, we shall be cursed.
So it's black and white to you. Nothing's changed in that regard, and we have no reason to look at it differently.
No, and I can tell you, Dr. Brown, for myself, I came from a very hyper-dispensationalist, fundamentalist background.
Mm-hmm.
But when you come to the full understanding of the whole truth of God, I don't see how you could possibly dismiss Jeremiah 31, the repetition of the same promises throughout the Psalms. God over and over and over again promises he will bless those who bless Israel and curse those who curse them. Israel.
Yeah, it seems to be a major theme. And for example, in Numbers, when Balaam is called on by Balak to curse the nation of Israel, and he can't do it, God turns the curse into a blessing. He says, blessed are those who bless you, and cursed are those who curse you. So this is Balaam speaking this over the nation as a whole. And obviously, it's the nation as a whole that can be misunderstood, that can be imperfect, and yet God calls for kind treatment towards them. It doesn't mean that we don't call Israel to account if we feel there's sin, if we feel there's injustice. Israel is far from perfect. But I see no reason to disbelieve this. I personally do believe that one reason God has had mercy on America is because we have been a good friend of Israel and stood with Israel and helped Israel fight against its enemies. I personally believe that. And if we don't, I would be gravely concerned about our well-being. There's enough sin in our midst. There's enough ugliness in our midst. I would be gravely concerned about what would happen next if we turn hostile to Israel. Gravely concerned for Israel, concerned for Israel, but much more gravely concerned for America. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Jimmy in Detroit, Michigan. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. I just wanted to chime in based on that caller a couple calls back.
Yes.
I really feel that, I just got Joel Richardson's book recently, When the Jew Rules the World.
Yes.
And it just, yeah, it really goes into this issue, and it really kind of knocks down the argument, because if you look at Romans 11, I mean, when Paul talks about Israel in the end of days, basically that all of them will be saved, it really makes so much sense when you read the passage, or the passage that he quotes right after that, saying all Israel will be saved. He says the deliverer will come out of Zion and banish ungodliness from Jacob. And that prophecy is basically, it goes into the future restoration of the kingdom of Israel. So, I mean, it really just seems like it applies directly to the salvation of Israel as a whole. And so, I mean, that just clearly, I mean, points to me as like, you know, that all Israel will be saved as a nation, and
yeah,
that, you know, it really points to the future restoration of the kingdom of Israel. And also, you know, I just think a lot of this comes to a lack of understanding of the covenant. Like, people just think of the Old Covenant as like everything in the Old Testament, but it's like when we think of the covenants, I feel like the Abrahamic covenant and the Davidic covenant were unconditional, whereas the Mosaic covenant was conditional. So,
right.
So, I mean, the blessing of Israel and the descendants of Abraham was always unconditional, I feel like. And, you know, I just think the possession of the land was conditional based on Israel's performance.
Yes, but, absolutely. You know, so people would say, well, then how can they be back in the land? Because that's grace. That's God saying, I'm going to do over and above. Look, God will never do less than he promised, but he often does more than he promises. And our previous caller might agree that there'll be a future salvation of Israel. He might well agree with that, just that the modern state is not the fulfillment. That's why I've argued and never gotten a good answer against it. If God scattered us in his wrath, we don't have the power to regather ourselves, if we've been regathered, he must have been the one that brought us back. Look, I was doing a presentation to high school students about creation and why I believe that God is our creator. And you know the old statement, I think, therefore I am. So my basic statement was, I am, therefore God exists. In other words, there's no other way to explain the origin of the universe, the origin of life, and the complexity of the human being without God being a creator. Well, Israel has been regathered, therefore God did it. It's very simple to me. And because of promises, not because of Israel's goodness or badness, but because God keeps his word, he will hold us to account as to how we treat Israel. May we continue to be a friend of Israel, an even better friend. And if we are, we can help the Palestinians as well.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, I got into this in my message yesterday at Grace Chapel in Franklin, Tennessee, Understanding Radical Islam. Once Islam has taken over an area, once a nation, a region has come under Islamic control and come under Islamic law, for Islam to lose it is a terrible blight. It's a terrible reproach to Islam. It would be as if someone, you're a married man, someone took your wife and kids from you and moved into the house across the street from you. You had to live with that agony every day. Well, all the more when the land that was once under Islamic control is now back under Jewish control. Talking about Palestine, Israel, the city of Jerusalem. Hamas can never be true to Islam and make a lasting peace treaty with Israel. Cannot. Iran cannot be true to Islam, to radical Islam at the least, and make a peace treaty with Israel. It cannot be. So it's no surprise that I'm looking at a headline now. Marwan Issa, top commander of the group's military wing, Hamas's military wing, Izzaddin al-Qassam Brigades, who hasn't been seen in public for the past 3 years, made these comments at a conference organized by a Hamas-linked think tank. Quote, "We are not seeking confrontation with Israel, but we continue to strengthen our capabilities by producing more rockets. Israel's statements on this matter are of no interest to us." And he spoke of a future war with Israel. Of course, they have to be looking forward to a future war with Israel. It's part of their ideology. The resurrection will not happen, according to Islam, until the Muslims fight against the Jews and overcome the Jews. Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech, according to Stephen Mufsin in the Washington Post, it is splitting the U.S. Jewish organizations. Leading Jewish organizations have long claimed to be devoted to forging bipartisan support for Israel in the United States. Yet this is what bipartisanship on Israel looks like on the eve of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech to a joint meeting of Congress. He appears to be more popular in America right now than President Obama, despite all the controversy. The Republican Jewish Coalition has posted a new video ad slamming President Obama's talks with Iran and launched a full-page print ad in Sunday's New York Times. Worried that lawmakers might boycott the speech altogether, a board member of AIPAC prodded local AIPAC activists to apply pressure on Representative Chris Van Hollen, Democrat from Maryland, to attend. Others are thinking in Israel, don't blow this now. I mean, this dispute between Obama and Netanyahu could hurt Israeli-American relations. Others saying that this fate, the security of the nation is at stake. And on it goes. My friend Rabbi Shmuley took out a full-page ad or a major ad in the New York Times, not sure if it was full-page or not, claiming that Susan Rice has a blind spot when it comes to genocide and that she was quoted by a previous high-level official that in the time of the genocide in Rwanda that the word genocide should not be used so as to draw attention to it if we weren't doing enough. And according to Rabbi Shmuley, Susan Rice is not doing enough when it comes to Israel, claiming that Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech to Congress would be upsetting the fabric of the relationship between America and Israel. His ad has been widely condemned in the Jewish world as inflammatory and untrue, and that, in fact, Susan Rice is a lover of Israel. Madeleine Albright said, anyone watching history can see Ambassador Rice as a patriotic public servant, conscientious voice versus genocide, and staunch ally of Israel. Of course, Shmuley, for his part, says, wake up time, America. This is what's going on, and we need to come to grips with it. So my question again, what happens to America if we do not stand with Israel today? When I say stand with Israel, I mean the Jewish people living in the land of Israel today. I mean the modern state of Israel that I am quite sure has been reestablished by God despite its many flaws and failings. Let's go to Washington, D.C. Jay, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, before I make my comment, did you play with the Jay Sekulow band?
No, I didn't know he had a band. The band that I played with, the best band that I played with the last couple of years right before we got saved and right after, it was just three of us, the guitar player has since gone to be with the Lord. But we were just known in our little circles because we were too young to play publicly where they served alcohol and stuff like that. So, no, I didn't know Jay Sekulow had a band, though, back then.
Yeah, I had called his show months back, and I made a comment to him, and he said he was going to get in contact with you. He did not even know you were a drummer, and I said, wow, how could you miss that? But he said you guys were friends.
Oh, yeah, we'll have to do a reunion. Maybe we'll get Alex McFarland, who's a apologist and a real good guitar player. Maybe we could. What did Jay play?
He plays drums, but he also plays guitar.
All right. We'll have to oust him from the drums, get me a good double bass set in a couple weeks to get sharp again. But anyway, back to the serious topic. We're short on time. Please dive in.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to say history shows that God's word is true because every country, you know, anybody can look into this, that was kind to the Jews that were living in that country, Poland, Germany, Egypt, and probably a ton of other countries I'm missing, Portugal, Spain. At the time they were good to them, things were prosperous. At the time they weren't, things went bad. And I'll give you an example of that. Germany was not the only anti-Semitic country. There were willing Nazis. Hungary, Romania, Croatia, some other, probably some ones I'm missing. Now, after the war, because they were evil to the Jews, my interpretation is they went into about 40 years of bondage of communism. Now, that not with those countries, but if people look into the history of the Jewish existence and how people, I hate to use the term coexist, I just don't want to use that term, but I used it. If they were kind to them, bless those who bless thee, curse those who curse thee.
Yeah.
So also, these other Christians.
Yeah, and tell you what, Jay, I've just got to jump in, only because I'm out of time. But some would say that the British Empire stopped being great when it became anti-Israel with the return of the Jewish people. It's been in decline since then. Some would say, look at what happened in Germany with the division between East and West Germany and the terrible hardships suffered by the nation. Some would say that was a direct result of mistreating Israel. You can make a good case for it. But this much I know. God has preserved the people of Israel for a purpose, and God will accomplish his ultimate purposes, and I want to be part of those purposes, praying for the salvation of Israel and standing with Israel. All right, friends, we are out of time. Wish I could get to more calls, but I can't. Please take advantage. We are extending the special offer last week. We got such a good response, especially at the end of the week, to this tremendous DVD on the fundamental flaws of Darwinian evolution, all presented from a scientific basis by scholars, by scientists, by professors. It's an eye-opener. We're packaging the 96-minute DVD together with two great interviews we did last week with creationist scientists, actually young Earth creationists. The whole package is only $25 for all of that, postage paid. Go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You can order right there. My bottom line today, did God scatter Israel? Yes. Has God preserved Israel? Yes. Has God regathered Israel? Yes. Does that matter? Yes. Boy, a lot to report about from the National Religious Broadcasters Conference last week, and something major coming down in Charlotte, North Carolina today, and yours truly. I'll be right in the thick of it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes or no? What's it going to be? How is the Charlotte City Council going to vote tonight? A so-called discrimination bill that actually could potentially, if passed, discriminate against the entire city. Does that sound extreme? I'll explain why I said that. 866-34-TRUTH. Tell you more about that. Tell you more about National Religious Broadcasters. Just had a great hour talking about Prime Minister Netanyahu and his planned speech tomorrow night to Congress. Coinciding with the day before Purim, the Jewish holiday, when often this has been a time of divine reversal, supernatural reversal in the Jewish world, God intervening. Is that going to happen again? Well, listen to the first hour and give it prayerful consideration, 866-348-7884. If you live in Greater Charlotte, or if you have a viewpoint on this bill, I'd love for you to call in. I would love to talk to you if you differ with me. As God willing, as soon as this show is over, which will be 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, I am literally getting right into my car, driving with my assistant Dylan, and going straight to the rally in Charlotte. Should be there by 4:30, and then I'm scheduled to speak at 4:50, and then I'm speaker something like number 63 out of 75 or 80 speakers, whatever the number is of those who are going to be speaking to the city council. They've gotten more emails on this than anything they've ever done, more controversy in the city. I was pleased to see that the Charlotte Observer, which has been famously liberal and often siding with gay activism to the point of advertising some years ago about how many gay positive stories they had in 1 year at a gay activist event, they advertised that. Their editorial was basically presenting both sides, which means that it's recognized controversy here. And then, as expected, they had a pro and con editorial, pro and con editorial Sunday morning. The con editorial saying don't vote for this bill was written by my friend and colleague David Benham. David and Jason scheduled to be on the air with us later this week. And David has been tied up at airports trying to get back to Charlotte. And he may even be able to call in and chat with us on the air. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me lay this out first, okay? The North Carolina Values Coalition put out a letter to the members of the city council. They have released this publicly with many, many signatures. Including, let me read some of the first ones to you. Mark Harris, senior pastor, First Baptist in Charlotte. David and Jason Benham, Benham Real Estate. Then yours truly. Dr. Frank Turek, author, correct but not politically correct. Matthew Harrison, MD. Pat Baldridge, CEO, Charlotte Christian Chamber. Greg Prevenzano, co-founder and president, ACN. Mel Graham, CEO, Graham Enterprises. Board member, Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. Dr. Richard Land, president, Southern Evangelical Seminary. It's page after page, Christian leaders, business leaders saying, don't sign this. Why? Because we're bigoted, discriminatory, hateful? No, because we care about the entire city. And as North Carolina Values Coalition has laid out, the ordinance that the city council is going to be voting on is unconstitutional. It creates undue regulatory burdens on private businesses and unnecessarily exposes them to lawsuits and liability by requiring them to give up their First Amendment rights of freedom of speech, religion, and association. We come back. I am going to Louisville, Kentucky, where David Benham has had quite an extraordinary journey so far. I don't know that I've heard of mishaps like this trying to get back. We're going to hear from David. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. You talk about a crazy, hectic schedule. You talk about live radio being the absolute very best. Here we are. Take you right in the thick of some major things happening in the city of Charlotte that are of interest to the entire nation. 866-34-TRUTH. Now, I think David Benham, all right, David's not, here's what happened. David and Jason were flying back from meetings they were in and interviews they were doing. Flight got canceled. They went into another location to fly out of there. Then that flight got canceled. So then coming back from Kentucky, they're on the plane. They're ready to go to takeoff. Suddenly something feels funny. What happened? A wheel broke. A wheel broke on the plane. Correct. A wheel broke on the plane, and they had to get back in. Then they finally get on another plane now. I just get a text from David that they can't open the door. People are trapped on the plane. They can't open the door. So they somehow get them off. And now he called, was holding, just texted me, sorry, I got to run. They just put him back on the plane. So hopefully he'll be there in time for the rally. But I want to bring back on the air with us Tammy Fitzgerald, who leads the North Carolina Values Coalition. I was just reading some of the letter that the coalition sent to the members of the city council. Again, if you live anywhere near Charlotte, join us for the rally at 4 tonight. I'll be heading there straight after radio. 4 tonight, this will be at 600 East 4th Street. This is really a historic rally right across from the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Government Center, 600 East 4th Street. Tammy, thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, a great job on the letter and on gathering these many signatures from business leaders, from Christian leaders, and this is Catholic, Protestant support in many ways for what's happening. This is across the business world. What are you hearing in terms of the amount of attention that this bill is drawing?
Well, Dr. Brown, it sort of was conceived behind closed doors and was quiet from November until just 2 weeks ago. And yet in 2 weeks, we've been able to generate over 50,000 emails to the city council and 5,000 signatures on a petition, radio ads, a website against it, and lots of press coverage. So now it's out in the open. What the city council thought it could do privately, secretly, without the citizens of Charlotte finding out, is now exposed to the light. And there is lots of interest. We're expecting a big turnout for the rally that starts in just 45 minutes in front of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg City Center. And so we are hoping that the city council will come to its senses and not take this step when apparently there is so much opposition across the city to it.
Now, when you say the city council come to their senses, isn't this just a bill that says you can't discriminate against people based on sexual orientation or gender identity? Why do you phrase it, and I totally agree with you, I just want to explain it to our listeners, that this is a matter of the city council coming to its senses?
Well, because this is the type of ordinance that, when passed in other states and cities across the country, has allowed for widespread discrimination against Christians and people of other faiths, the Muslim faith, for instance, on the basis of their religious beliefs. This is what will enable the city of Charlotte to discriminate against Christian-owned businesses. It will prevent the city from contracting with any business that doesn't include in its own internal company policies these same non-discrimination clauses. And it's going to require other businesses that would be considered a public accommodation to violate any religious beliefs they might have just in order to keep their doors open to the public. And this is what we've seen happening across the country. The most recent case was Baronelle Sussman, a florist in Washington State, who, because of the local non-discrimination law there in Olympia, Washington, was sued by the Attorney General of the state and has been held guilty of violating the state's non-discrimination laws because she just simply declined to provide flowers for a same-sex wedding.
Right, and so, and the gentleman had been a longtime customer. They discussed it. She hugged. She was shocked that anything came out of it. But so we are talking about the city council could potentially vote to discriminate against Christians, to discriminate against people, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, atheist, doesn't matter, of conservative moral values, to discriminate against people who say, you know, just out of conscience, we can't recognize two men or two women coming together as, quote, marriage. And then would declare every public restroom or locker room in Charlotte to be gender neutral. This is actually being debated. It's almost like a bad joke, and yet this
that is the just totally illogical part of the law, because it would allow exposing young children to men and women of the opposite sex in locker rooms and bathrooms, and it's just totally unacceptable just from an exposure, indecent exposure situation. But what can also happen is that someone can claim to identify with the opposite gender. A man, for instance, might claim to identify as a woman, and even though he's not in actuality, he may be waiting in bathrooms as a sexual predator. So this type of law can lead to sexual predation. And for that reason alone, it should be voted down by the city council. But the question here about the discrimination part of it is whether you want the government to mandate this type of non-discrimination policy for all businesses in the city of Charlotte, or whether the businesses ought to be free to decide what company policies they want to adopt themselves. So this is a freedom issue, and it violates the basic tenet of our Constitution, which is free exercise of religion, free speech, and the freedom of association.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, there's no constitutional basis for it, historical basis for it. When you're talking about the bathroom issue, of course, we're not saying that your average person who says, I'm a man trapped in a woman's body, that this person is a sexual predator. But once you say that bathrooms are gender neutral, then, and this has happened in different states now. There are documented cases where a voyeur, a heterosexual predator, is going to use this to say, hey, I can go in the bathroom and just claim that I'm a woman just to be around women in the bathroom. There are sick people who do these crazy kinds of things, and this now opens the door. And, you know, Tammy, when we talk to people about this, they say, are you kidding me? They're in a state of shock. I can't imagine that city council members, if they have kids or grandkids, say, oh, yeah, we want to be the ones who signed off on this bill. And then the discrimination issue, when your first fine Christian company, maybe family-owned Christian business, been in the city for decades, maybe multi-generational, when that first company is put out of business because of this, because some gay activist goes to them and asks them to do something that they can't do in good conscience, that's going to be on the city council. I can't believe that people of conscience that are on the city council would want that to happen or would think it's beneficial.
Well,
go ahead.
Yes, and what has happened here, Dr. Brown, is that the Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest gay and lesbian rights activist group in the country, came to the city attorney and started proposing this ordinance, and there's been no attempt on the city attorney's part to include any kind of presentation of facts on the other side of this issue. And so the city council members are basically uninformed about what the consequences of enacting an ordinance like this is. And I blame the city attorney for basically trying to pull the wool over their eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. And
there's,
God willing,
there's been,
yeah. Go ahead.
There's been no presentation of any evidence that widespread discrimination of this sort is even going on in the city. That lots of companies in Charlotte have already adopted internal policies that protect against discrimination on the basis that this ordinance would. And yet, what we're talking about here is taking away freedom of companies to decide that for themselves and imposing it on them by government mandate.
Yeah, it's utterly outrageous on every level. If this had been brought to the light from the start, I doubt it would have ever gotten as far as it's gotten. But look, Tammy, we know this. Our enemies are not those who identify as LGBT. Our enemies are those who try to strip away liberties of others. And the editorial in the Charlotte Observer for the bill said three out of 1,000 people identify as transgender. You probably wouldn't know them if you saw them. They're already using the bathrooms without anybody knowing. Then why in the world are you going to try to make all bathrooms in Charlotte gender neutral? And why are you going to take the struggles of a few and now impose that on the whole? This is a matter of religious liberty. Join us at the rally, 4 o'clock, 600 East 4th Street in Charlotte. Tammy, thank you for all that you do. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, before I tell you more about this bill that is going to be voted on in Charlotte, 866-34-TRUTH, let me go to the phones. And I want to talk to you about what happened at National Religious Broadcasters Conference, the forum on the Bible and homosexuality. Let's go to David in Muskegon, Michigan. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I'm a torchbearer, and I wanted to first throw that out there to all your listeners that if you're not a torchbearer, I can't think of a better way to spend money than to support your voice and hold your hands up as you go out and fight the good fight for us.
Thank you, David, from the bottom of my heart for your support and for your encouragement to others. That means the world to us. Thanks so much.
Not a problem. You've been a great mentor of mine from afar, and I just wanted to let you know that, and that there's a lot of us out there that love you very much and want you to continue to do what you're doing for us. I want to bring up from Friday, you spoke with Erin, where she had brought up the challenge that her partner worked in a healthcare setting and that she couldn't get insurance because they were lesbians, and that this was an example to her of discrimination of her. But I guess I wanted to put up a counterpoint to that, and that is the fact that, you know, my sister is married to a man, has 5 children, and because of their work situations, he's self-employed, they couldn't get insurance either. And so by Aaron's point, should I be able to marry my sister in order for her to get good insurance, like to put her on my insurance? I think most people would say no, that's kind of a ridiculous point. But I think that's kind of the issue, too. I mean, in one way, we kind of feel bad and say, geez, that's too bad that you guys are in a loving, committing relationship, raising kids, but you can't get insurance for both partners. But there are millions of people who are men and women who are married in the same situation. So I don't think that redefining marriage is the answer to that problem, per se. But I just want to kind of bring that point up, and I'm sure you probably would have got around to that, but you're running out of time in your segment.
Of course, I wouldn't have come from that particular angle because you're describing a certain situation that was not in my head at the moment. But the big issue, look, I've interacted with Erin a couple times on the radio, a little bit in Facebook, and really looking forward to sitting with my wife and her and Erin's partner one of these days, not to have a confrontation, but just to talk as neighbors in the same city. And she seems to be as sweet and considerate a person as I've interacted with, and wanting to recognize that even though I fundamentally differ with her in so many ways that I'm a civil human being, I understand from her perspective or the perspective of other gay listeners that I oppose them, that I don't recognize the validity of their relationship, that I have these antiquated biblical ideas that condemn homosexual practice when the whole world is embracing it, and so on. I can understand how they view me. Those that get to know me know, of course, that my heart is to care for them and love them, but I believe God's ways are best. It comes down to, though, ultimately, is the union of any two people marriage? If it's not the union of a man and woman, then why is it requiring two people? If it's not a man and a woman, here, in the ridiculous simplicity, if you have a plug and there's the male and female on it, well, you require the two parts and for the connection that happens. Well, the unique connection between male and female, biologically, emotionally, spiritually, the way God intended it and ordained it, if it's not two people that marry because it's man and woman, then why not three people? Why not six? Why not one? And there's no good answer to that. Once you redefine marriage, you make it meaningless. And the only reason that the government gets involved with marriage, because the government doesn't tell us who we can date. The government doesn't even tell us who can live in our house. But the only reason the government gets involved with the institution of marriage is that marriage conveys benefits on the society, so the society conveys benefits on marriage. And the benefits are that for every child to come into the world, it does require a male and a female. And the ideal environment in which a child is raised is connected to its biological mother and father. And that then produces children for the next generation and ensures the greatest environment of stability for the next generation, which is the best social welfare state, is solid marriages and families. So the government has no business getting involved otherwise. And if marriage is just going to be redefined to mean anything, why should the government even care? So I'm sympathetic to the fact that people live together and they can't get certain benefits. But I've said it many times before, I would be committed to my bride, Nancy. So we go on 39 years of marriage this month. I'd be committed to her and her to me if we had to pay more taxes, if we had no benefits, if we couldn't do joint anything, simply because we've loved each other all these years and been married in God's sight. Hey, David, thanks for calling, and thank you for the support again and the kind words. Much appreciated. And if you want to act on what David said, go to the website right now, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on Donate. If you become a torchbearer, what that means is you commit to give at least $1 a day, so $30 or more per month. For some, you could do that in your sleep. You could do 10 times that. For some, it's a massive step of faith. But to be a torchbearer, you give $30 or more per month. Every month, we send you a new message, either on CD or electronically. I'll probably be sending out this recent message I just preached on understanding radical Islam. I think it'd be real important for our torchbearers to hear. We give you 15% discount in our online bookstore. That's unlimited. That's any amount of materials. And we also give you access to online classes that I've taught. And as we add more, you'll have access to those as well. Those are normally paid for, but you get them for free. And the biggest thing, you get to share the work with us. You get to share in the reward with us. You get to help us reach more and more people, reach the lost sheep of the house of Israel, spark moral and cultural revolution, support world missions, and hold my hands up wherever I travel. You are part of it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to John in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, thank you for what you're doing, turning me on what's happening here on my way down, and want to support what you're saying. What I have been thinking about this and praying about this, and what comes to me most is love. God's love for us, for gay and lesbian people, for everybody. And how is it that we would, it would be outrageous to insist that people who don't share the values of the Christian faith would be forced to go to church, be forced to have to be part of religious exercises and that kind of thing like we see over in the Middle East. But yet, folks who want to be recognized and loved on and accepted would insist that Christians be forced to participate in something that violates their religious convictions.
I think, yeah, John, it's a reverse it's a reverse tolerance. It's an intolerance in the name of tolerance. And look, I am 100% with you to declare all out love for those who identify as LGBT, to pray, to ask God to give us a greater love for our friends, neighbors, family members, coworkers who identify as LGBT, to get involved in their lives in every practical way we can, to bring the good news of the gospel of Jesus every way that we can, absolutely, 100%. But I'm not going to redefine society based on that. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. I want to play a couple of clips, then come back to Charlotte. Charlotte, North Carolina, that is, not the person Charlotte. A couple of clips from National Religious Broadcasters event last week. This was a public forum. It was not a debate. It was a public forum, public conversation on the Bible and homosexual practice, on public policy, marriage, those things. Hosted by Janet Parshall, well-known radio host, terrific radio host. And she was the moderator. Ann Polk, a former lesbian, married to John Polk, who was former homosexual, now back living as a homosexual man. So she is raising her kids, her three kids on her own, three sons. Ann, who leads Restored Hope Network. Then Justin Lee, who heads up the Gay Christian Network. He is right now celibate. He is not sexually active. He does believe that, according to Scripture, gays can be in a committed relationship and follow Jesus at the same time. Others in his group do not believe that. That was Justin. Then Brandon Robertson, just 22 years old, but already being quoted in Time magazine and things like that as a young evangelical leader who is calling for LGBTQ inclusion in the churches. So it was quite an interesting forum. It went pretty much exactly the way I expected, because I knew that neither Justin nor Brandon were there to debate. That's number one. I knew, number two, that they wouldn't try to debate me on the Bible. So we got to lay that out plainly, that the Bible plainly forbids homosexual practice. But we all agreed in terms of the need for the church to be more loving, more compassionate, more understanding. And we hope to have a full audio of that and even video that we'll be posting or linking to shortly. But just a couple of clips to give you a feel for what was being discussed. We'll start with number 12. Now, there's a lot of echo in the room, so it's not the most perfect sound quality, but I think you'll hear all right. This is Justin Lee from the Gay Christian Network. And by the way, we had a lot of discussion, clip number 6, Joey, a lot of discussion about using the word gay at all, that for a Christian. And Justin's thing was, look, you talk to a kid today, a young person, that's how they identify. In other words, if they're same-sex attracted, they say, I'm gay. That's their vocabulary, and therefore, he wants to be there for many that have dropped out of church, many who have been suicidal, many who have been kicked out of family because the family didn't react properly to them or understand how to minister to them. And I said, well, great. Use that as a net to reach those. Absolutely. Do that. But then disciple them out of the gay identity, because if you're in Jesus, that doesn't define who you are. Your sexual desires, your romantic attractions don't define who you are as a human being, especially in Jesus. Clip number 6, Justin Lee speaking.
And this is part of what the church has not done well, is we treat people as if they've made a sinful choice when all they've done is to try to be honest about what they're going through. And that's where we need to stop and say, let me love this person where they are.
Absolutely. I agree with Justin 100% that when a kid is struggling, they don't know what to do with this. Maybe it's your kid. They're 14. They're surrounded by a culture that says, just come out, just declare yourself. The whole Glee TV culture with its ridiculous sexual ethics and so on, or lack thereof. So here's a kid struggling, and they tell their parents, you know, and the only language they have is to say, I'm gay. They haven't done anything. They're not sleeping with someone of the same sex. They're not downloading gay pornography. They're just struggling, and they're trying to come to terms with this. And that's the vocabulary they have. And they tell the parents, I'm gay. And the parents react as if that kid has now made a declaration, I am sinning, I am living in sin. Whereas all they're trying to do is say, this is how I feel. If the parents said, hey, we are fallen human beings. Every one of us has aspects of us that are contrary to God's perfect ideal. And you're our kid, and this doesn't define you. All right, let's say it like this. You're same-sex attracted, but first, how's your relationship with God? Let's work on that. Let's get you solidly connected with the Lord. And this is not the end of the world. This is not the end of the world. We're going to believe God's going to redeem this for good, and you're our kid. We love you just the same. And make a big difference, a very big difference.
God of life. Hear our cry.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Joey, you are right. Sorry to interrupt the Prime Minister. My profound apologies for interrupting the voice of Prime Minister Netanyahu. Joey, my bad. I looked down at clip number 7, which said 11 seconds, and I hastily told you number 11. My bad. But let's play number 7 anyway. This was from the Forum at National Religious Broadcasters on the Bible and homosexuality. It was not a debate. It was a very fruitful conversation. I also believe laid out some clear problems that we need to address and clarifications we need to bring to the body. As I said to those involved, I said, look, we are dealing day and night with gay activism being the principal threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience in America. We are dealing with an aggressive assault to try to get the church to change its views on what the Bible teaches. I said, if everyone would stop fighting us on those fronts and we could work together to reach out with compassion to the gay and lesbian community, we could do it a lot more effectively. All right, clip number 7.
Evangelicals for marriage equality, our statement is clear. We are not saying a theological position. We are saying that civil marriage equality is something we can support no matter what you come down to theologically.
That was Brandon Robertson. Of course, what I laid out plainly and others did, you can't mess with the meaning of marriage. In the society as a whole, if Christians are to be salt and light, if we are to be the moral conscience of the society, then you cannot mess with something as fundamental as marriage. You say, well, we're just talking civil. Well, why get engaged with it? Why support it? Why affirm it? Why agree to it when it brings about a fundamental change in the most fundamental institution in our entire society? Why mess with it? Again, as Chesterton said, don't take down a fence until you know why it was put up. I mean, this is fundamentally important stuff. One more clip, again, on the same line, Brandon Robertson. And I got some great time with some of the participants outside of the forum itself. I think that was the best thing of all, to interact privately. But again, the position Brandon was advocating, clip number 8.
I believe that the Bible does make this distinction, though, between rendering to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. And I'm an advocate for let's make the kingdom of God stronger. Let's preach the gospel into the culture. But let's not try to Christianize the culture, because that's not what we're called to. That's not what Christ called us to do. You can't expect non-Christians to act like Christians. Absolutely.
Right. So we don't expect non-Christians to act like Christians. But what does that mean? So when slavery exists, Christians don't stand against it? Is that what it means? When we see babies slaughtered in the womb, that we don't try to save their lives and provide homes for them or change the minds of the mothers to keep their own babies? That when we see injustice, when we see human trafficking, that we say, hey, sinners are going to sin. You can't expect sinners to stop sinning. When some big porn place is going to open up and it's nearby a school and you say, this is outrageous, it shouldn't be allowed, there should be some zoning rules. Hey, sinners are going to sin. Of course sinners are going to sin, and Christians are going to do what's right. You can't expect sinners not to sin. You can't expect Christians not to be Christian. At least that should be the mentality. Therefore, we're going to do what's right. Therefore, we're going to stand for what's right. Therefore, we're going to act on what's right. And in doing so, we will raise the level of society. By tampering with marriage, you tamper with all of society. It's not going to happen in a day. It's not going to happen in a week or a month. These are things that happen over a period of years and years and years. Look, we didn't get into the debt we're in overnight, did we? So the letter from North Carolina Values Coalition made 4 main points to the city of Charlotte in terms of why they should not pass this bill that's being voted on tonight. 1, the ordinance is unconstitutional, and that is then explained at great length. 2, the ordinance puts children and women in danger and violates their sense of privacy and security. Again, wake up for a second. Everybody's kind of slap yourself in the face. Wait. Charlotte City Council is actually debating making all locker rooms and bathrooms in public buildings in the city, making them gender neutral. This is not a joke. Let me check the calendar. Let me confirm this. It's March 2nd. It's not April 1st. No, this is not a joke. The ordinance puts children and women in danger and violates their sense of privacy and security. You're telling me that heterosexual predators are not going to take advantage of something like this? Number three, the ordinance requires the city of Charlotte to engage in impermissible discrimination on the basis of religion and association when it chooses businesses with which to contract and do business. The city of Charlotte could say, well, because your business won't make cakes for a same-sex commitment ceremony, because your business won't print flyers for gay activist cause, then we're not going to do business with you. This would allow Charlotte to discriminate against hundreds of thousands of people. Number four, the ordinance violates Article 2, Section 24J of the Constitution of the State of North Carolina by creating a local non-discrimination ordinance regarding regulating labor and trade. So this would be contrary to the state ordinances. And this letter to the city council is signed, as I said, by page after page of leaders. I'm looking at the names of captains on U.S. Airways American, CEOs, pastors, leaders, school principals, etc., all saying do the right thing and do not vote for this bill. Here's what my friend and colleague David Benham wrote in the Charlotte Observer on Sunday. To enjoy the freedom to live according to your conscience without being forced to promote ideas or behaviors contrary to your convictions. Do you believe men should be prohibited from using women's restrooms? Should a gay t-shirt maker be forced to create anti-gay marriage t-shirts? Should a Muslim baker be mandated to make a gay wedding cake? That's exactly what this ordinance will do if passed. There are two obvious and disturbing common sense aspects to this provision. First, by allowing transgendered males to enter women's restrooms, our city is forcing all women, including mothers and daughters, to be put in uncomfortable situations in the privacy of bathrooms, lockers, and shower rooms. Common sense, please, please, somebody have common sense tonight. Second, it opens the door for male heterosexual predators to pose as women under the guise of being transgender. Remember, being transgendered is a psychological state of mind that anyone can claim no matter what clothes they wear. Here, let me interrupt this for a minute. If you're a transgender activist or you identify as transgender yourself, or an ally, please explain this to me. I'm being dead serious. I'm not mocking struggles you've gone through. I'm not mocking rejection you struggle with. I'm not mocking perhaps suicide attempts that you carried. I am not diminishing, demeaning any of that. But what if I was absolutely convinced that I was black? Tell me. I'm sure some listening that differ with me right now. I was absolutely convinced that I was black, 100% sure that I was black. Does that make me black? Should I get, if such a thing existed, should I get some type of minority housing privilege? Is there any way to test it? What if a psychological battery of tests demonstrated that I really believed I was black? Would that make me black? No, I'm white. And if I was black and I was convinced that I was white, if I was absolutely sure of it, if I always felt that way, if I always felt at home, not at home in my own body, would that make me white? No. It's the same with a man who feels he's trapped in a woman's body or vice versa. Unless there is some biological or chromosomal abnormality, sir, you're not a woman, nor should you use the woman's bathroom, nor should there be a law that forces the whole city and every mother and every daughter and every granddaughter and every wife to be in a situation that they'd be uncomfortable with, even if you're a nice person. They'd say, sir, you don't belong in our bathroom. I'm not a hater when I say that. That's not being hateful. That's not being transphobic. Oh, please, hear what I'm saying. David continues. From Los Angeles, Milwaukee, and Olympia, Washington, there are real examples of heterosexual men dressing like women and entering women's rooms with intent to commit crimes. Historically, civil rights have never been provided to protect behaviors or psychological states of mind. Do we really want the city council to require all public restrooms and locker rooms be gender neutral? The expansive list of protections would also require business owners to promote or endorse events against their conscience. For the past 12 years, we've sold over 10,000 houses in this great city and have never required our customers to take a sexual orientation litmus test. The vast majority of business owners in Charlotte, many owned by people of faith, already happily serve all customers, including those who identify as LGBTQ. From Google and Sealed Air to CIAA and the DNC, our city is able to attract companies and events from around the world because Charlotte enjoys a unique balance between economic vibrancy and biblical values that are both welcoming and respectful. Research from the Alliance Defending Freedom legal organization cannot in any case provide a substantiated or even alleged pattern of sexual orientation or gender identity discrimination in Charlotte. In other words, discrimination is not a problem here. We'll be right back, friends. If you're in Charlotte right now, starting in 15 minutes, head over there. 600 East 4th Street. 600 East 4th Street. You'll see the rally.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Can I remind you of the words of G.K. Chesterton? I've quoted this a lot. I may end up quoting it in some context at city council or the rally today. Not sure. In fact, as I'm speaking to you, I'm going to email that to myself just to remember. But it's G.K. Chesterton who said, don't ever take a fence down until you know the reason it was put up. Don't ever take a fence down until you know the reason it was put up. When you start tampering with things as foundational as gender distinctions, when you start tampering with things as foundational as marriage, you mess with things you don't want to mess with. There are reasons things have been in place. Look, have there not been people for centuries who felt like they were trapped in the wrong body? Is this a new phenomenon or has this existed? It existed. Okay. Did we need to make bathrooms gender neutral in the past? Are there people who were same-sex attracted through the centuries? Yes. Did we need to redefine marriage in the past? Why now? It is the aftermath of the sexual revolution. It is another symptom of the sexual anarchy in which we live. Here's yet another example. Eric Holder, no surprise, USA Today op-ed piece. He has taken the side of, quote, equality. He says nothing justifies excluding same-sex couples from the institution of marriage, and the Department of Justice will make clear that they want the Supreme Court to redefine marriage officially. They say that their answer is an unequivocal yes. Any surprise? No. No surprise at all. My only surprise is if people are surprised. Martin Luther King said this, "The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and the critic of the state, and never its tool." He said, if the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. And that's why we're in the crisis that we're in, because of a sleeping, compromised church. If we wake up, if we seek God earnestly for awakening, if we begin to declare Jesus boldly and with compassion, society will be shaken. The reason America's messed up is because the Church of America's messed up. The reason the Church of America's messed up is because the leaders of America, the Church of America, messed up. And therefore, I don't mean all churches, all leaders, all believers. No, but so many. If we will have awakening in our midst, our culture will experience awakening around us. Can I give you that quote from King again, Dr. King? The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and the critic of the state, and never its tool. If the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. Let me get back to David Benham's editorial. He said this, if this ordinance advanced by LGBT rights groups passes, everything changes. Clearly, he says, this ordinance isn't really about non-discrimination. It's about forcing the acceptance of behavior. This ordinance will place anyone who believes that A, only women should be in women's restrooms, or that B, business owners should not be forced to celebrate or endorse marriages that directly go against their conscience at risk of losing their business, being fined, or even facing time in jail if they simply stand by their convictions. So what can we do? If you live or work in the city of Charlotte, contact your elected members of the city council and respectfully share your opposition to the ordinance. Two, join us at 4 p.m. on Monday. That is 6 minutes from now. My voice, I'm shouting it out as loudly as I can to the people of Charlotte. Join me, 600 East 4th Street, right by the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Government Center. There is a rally about to take place outdoors now. I should be there in a half an hour and speaking in about 50 minutes. Join me there. And then we go to attend the city council meeting together at 6:30. Pray for clarity in this situation for our council members, as 1 Timothy 2, 1 through 3 encourages us to do. And David Benham also quotes Dr. King. In the words of Martin Luther King, a man dies when he refuses to stand for that which is right. David says, my brother Jason, I will be looking forward to meeting you on Monday night. I understand people on all sides of this issue are going to say, well, this is a civil rights issue, and we're on the right side of history. This is a civil rights issue. We're doing the right thing. Of course, I understand the perspectives. I understand that fully. My point is simply this. You do not turn society upside down. You do not violate all canons of common sense and civil decorum and render all bathrooms gender neutral and locker rooms, potentially gender neutral, to accommodate the struggles of 3 out of every 1,000 people. You don't do that. Nor do you pass a bill that makes discrimination against Christians legal and that allows the redefinition of marriage, which our state voted against 61% to 39%, to now make the majority vote something that you can discriminate against. But with this, I do believe we need a baptism of love, a baptism of divine love for those who identify as LGBT. As much as those listening would say to me, Mike Brown, you are utterly confused. You're standing against us and asking for love towards us. I am standing against redefinition of marriage. I'm standing against discrimination against Christians. I am standing against making bathrooms and locker rooms gender neutral. I am standing for the good of all people, and I would do whatever I can to improve the life quality of every individual person who lives in the greater Charlotte area. And the best way I can do that is by following Jesus and introducing them to know the Lord. And if you come to know the Lord in the midst of the struggles and challenges of this world, you will find life and wholeness and joy and peace and a purpose for living beyond anything you have known. Join me again, 600 East 4th Street. Get there within the next half hour, 45 minutes. There's still time. The rally will be going till about 5 o'clock. And let's pray for righteousness to rise. And whatever the city council does, to me, this is a rallying point to wake up the churches of the city, regardless of whether the city council does the right thing and votes against the bill or does the wrong thing and passes it. It is a rallying point and a wake-up moment. I've said I believe 2015 is the year of pushback. Let's see how that plays out. Due to popular demand, we are extending again the special offer from last week. We just got flooded with orders, especially towards the end of the week, and we said we better extend this another week so you can all take advantage of it. The 96-minute DVD on the Achilles heels of evolution. Scholars, scientists, clearly systematically presented the evidence why Darwinian evolution cannot work. You get the DVD plus two CDs or two interviews on CD of interviews with creation scientists Jonathan Sarfati and Robert Warka. The entire package, only $25 postage paid. Call or order 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and order there. My bottom line today, the church must do what it is called to do, stand for righteousness, reach out with compassion, and then call the government to do what's right, accountable to God.